Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
And I'm Tessie.
And we are sisters-in-law. We started this podcast because we believe that it isn't necessarily the rich, powerful, or well-known who are making waves in this world. It's the moms. It's the women tending to their toddlers while launching international nonprofits or caring for their babies and creating art. It's the women who believe in their mother self and their other self, and who are nourishing both, as those around them stand back in admiration for the way they stride through life. We know this to be true. It's the hand that rocks the cradle that rules the world. Join the Mama Bear community, where we support and encourage women doing big and bold things with their lives, in addition to being great moms, and dare you to harness the power of your Mama Bear to live a life of love and compassion. So today we are interviewing Aubrey Ryan. Aubrey is a wonderful thinker and mother and poet. We are talking to her today about the subject of poetry and about the way that it has been a consistent source of joy and of healing in Aubrey's life. Aubrey is well published. She just came out with a chapbook of her poems called The Good Beast. It's a beautiful little book, and she has had not only great success really as a poet, but just as this beautiful person moving about the world, blending her life of art and motherhood together. So we have a great time talking to her about her work and really kind of debunk the myth of poetry.
Yeah, Leslie, I wonder if there are other mama bears out there like me who, as soon as you said poetry, are like, peace, I'm out, you know? Because if you remember when you and I always email and text about ideas of people who we've either read their material or we know personally, and I said, yes, I'm interested, she sounds awesome, but you're going to have to write all the notes because I know nothing about poetry. But listen closely, Mama Bears. If you're thinking this, I get it. Aubrey, though, is amazing. And you'll hear on the podcast that actually I realized, and you're probably going to realize, that you are also consuming poetry, even if you don't know it, in the form of music or in some of your favorite TV shows. It's really a lot bigger than I thought. And it doesn't have to be like in this school setting.
Absolutely. I have been an advocate of poetry probably for my whole life. Like, I grew up, you know, reading Shel Silverstein and some of the younger poets working with a younger audience. And I just love it. I understand kind of the hesitation that surrounds poetry because I think we've just been told so many times that it's, you know, the only way to access it is as part of the canon, and it's just above and beyond, and there's all kinds of secret meanings that no one can really understand. But I think over and over again, I have found that that's just not the case. So I love poetry. I know in the podcast, Tessie, you reference a party that we once threw. We actually threw a poetry reading. Jake surprised me with this poetry party on our 10th wedding anniversary. He invited like 20 of our closest friends over to drink wine and read poetry aloud, and it was like a dream. It was probably one of my favorite nights ever. I loved it.
I don't think I've ever told you, but I actually dyed my hair bright purple for that party because I'm like, maybe if I look like someone who writes and consumes poetry, I will be able to read this aloud to Leslie and not sweat and cry. But I did both of those things. Did not work. The purple hair was not magical.
Well, it was really so sweet of our friends because everyone came with a poem to read. So it put some pressure on people, I think, and it just is a testament to the amazing friends that we have.
And how much we love you, by the way.
Yes, it was wonderful. So it was kind of, I guess that's a story of just how much I really do enjoy poetry. I like modern poets. I like poets that just sort of capture an everyday truth, and they just are able to tell that truth using really just a few words. I just find that is amazing. I read poems as prayers. Whenever I have a captive audience, I feel like I want to read a poem. So, like, if you come to my house on my birthday, like, you're probably going to hear a poem.
Well, you also performed one on Thanksgiving this year, too, before.
That's right.
The poem is
That's
the prayer.
Right. Because we were hosting, and as a prayer, I decided, you know what? I've got a captive audience. They really can't go anywhere, so I'm going to read a poem.
You also have your kids make one. That's your Christmas present, right?
It is. It is. How could I forget about that? Yeah, every year for Christmas, I ask for a poem from the kids. And so Jake helps them pick a poem. And honestly, they've been memorizing it. I think that's probably the English teacher in me. I think, like, memorization is kind of important, and or not necessarily important, but it's a great discipline for kids to get into, like, memorizing the sound of a poem. And so I am always delighted on Christmas morning. That's my gift from my family. So yeah, obviously I love poetry. I think you'll find there's a lot more to poetry than just sort of that kind of old idea that we have when you hear Aubrey talk about it.
I agree. And I actually don't think we need to introduce her all that much, because it's just a really incredible conversation. But I want our listeners to listen for these things that on the surface don't have much to do with poetry, but you'll see there's definitely kind of a through line there. So first, I gotta mention it, but I loved it because I'm all about kind of holistic healing. The role of poetry and art as medicine. We discuss whether these things can incite a revolution, which, hello, you and I love that idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and using poetry as a tool for empowerment and for social change. Oh, I love it. She was speaking our language. Mm-hmm. We should also listen for just sort of that, the way that poetry can sometimes be that Me Too that we talked about in Gervais's podcast. We'll link that in the show notes. But it can really be something that makes us realize we're not alone.
Absolutely. She talks about writing as healing for the writer, how mm-hmm. that's just as important, if not more so sometimes, than healing for the reader. And you and I have hit on that in the past with regards to our blogs and the different writing you do. But she talks about that with regards to her poetry as well.
Yeah, a number of our guests now have really highlighted their love of writing as being mm-hmm. kind of a healing practice, which is really cool. You also will hear some adorable coffee noises. We recorded this podcast in person, and it was on a day that we were actually recording 6 episodes in a row. And so, needless to say, we were relying heavily on coffee and carbs.
Yes, yes.
And so you're going to hear us pouring some coffee. We think the sound could be calming, but you might find it off-putting. We apologize, whatever.
We only kind of apologize. It was a necessity at that point. But finally, this is so exciting. We're so, so excited about this part. We want to hear your 6-word memoir. We talk about it on the episode, so you'll hear more. But post them on our Facebook wall or comment on our Instagram picture from this episode, your 6-word memoir. You can also email us if you're not down on the social media. That's totally cool. We want to hear it. We would love to compile them in some way and post them at some point. We know you guys have awesome stories to tell. So tweet us, email us, drop a letter. I don't know. Do people still do that?
Poets do. I'm pretty sure poets write letters.
That's right. Send an owl. Harry Potter. But we can't wait to hear and read your 6-word memoirs, Mama Bear.
Yeah, and one more thing, Tessie, I wanted mm-hmm. to point out, and I just learned this about Aubrey. She didn't bring it up in the podcast, but she recently donated a broadside of one of her poems, which basically is just a beautiful piece of paper with the words on. A lot of times it's like by letterpress. And she sold these at a little boutique in her town, and every bit of the money that she raised by selling her work went to the Compassion Collective, who then in turn sent that money to help Syrian families who have fled from their homes. So she says, I know it's just a drop in the bucket, but my hope is that a refugee family maybe feels a bit more witnessed, a bit more like part of the human family will not turn away. Oh. So we talk a lot about, you know, how poetry can be used as activism and revolution. And I think that's a great example of her recent activity.
Yeah. And it's a really good indicator for our mama bears about just her spirit and what you'll hear from our conversation. So Leslie, I can feel your excitement. I know you're dying to do it. Why don't you read us a poem as a way of transitioning to this inspiring interview with Aubrey?
Yay! So we have a captive audience. I have a feeling you're in your car listening, or maybe you're doing laundry and are stuck folding and can't take your earbuds off. So I'm doing it. I'm reading a poem. It's by Liesl Mueller. It's from her collection called Alive Together, and it's called Late Hours. And I chose this poem because I think it kind of encapsulates a lot of what we talk about on this podcast, which is just being awake to kind of the wonder of our lives and also understanding that we all have different experiences in this world. So it's called Late Hours. On summer nights, the world moves within earshot on the interstate with its swish and growl, an occasional siren that sends chills through us. Sometimes, on clear, still nights, voices float into our bedroom, lunar and fragmented, as if the sky had let them go long before our birth. In winter, we close the windows and we read Chekhov, nearly weeping for his world. What luxury to be so happy that we can grieve over imaginary lives. Welcome, Mama Bears, to another episode of the Mama Bear Dares podcast. Today, we are talking about one of my favorite subjects, poetry. We are talking with Aubrey Ryan, who is a beautiful poet and a mother of two sons. She is just a fantastic person that we cannot wait to introduce you to. Aubrey has a book of poetry called A Good Beast, and she has served as the poet in residence at the Midwest Writing Center and just has so much wisdom and just beauty to offer us today. So thank you so much, Aubrey, for being here.
I'm so happy to be here.
So we were just talking about the idea of poetry and how it's intimidating to some people. Now, you and I both, obviously, we love poetry. I know it's one of my go-tos, actually, of just like wanting a meditative sort of good read. But why do you think it is that poetry is so intimidating, and why shouldn't it be?
So I love this question because I've been thinking about this a lot and kind of just rolling this over in my head, this idea of poetry as intimidating. And I really want to get poetry out of academia. I mean, I think there's a place for it in academia, but I think that right now so much good work is being written outside of those walls, but we think of it as being in these academic journals and people who have won awards and people who have all these letters after their names and, you know, poems with big words. And so people get intimidated, like you said, mm-hmm. you feel. And I think that that is not the case with all poetry. I mm-hmm. think there is a lot of poetry that's really, really accessible. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it time and time again where people I know will say, oh my gosh, I picked up this book of Mary Oliver poems. Mm,
right.
Or I just started reading Hafiz or Rumi, and their mm-hmm. minds are blown, mm-hmm. and it's like this whole door is open, and not only do you feel like, oh, wait, I am someone who can read yes. poetry,
right.
but you also feel like, hey, world, like, poetry's not yeah. hard. Like, it's this thing for everyone. And, yeah, that's the thing. I was reading this interview with Robert Pinsky, this poet, And he actually is like a really well-known dude who's taught in the canon and he's taught mm-hmm. in academia. But he says poetry is very democratic mm-hmm. because it's for everyone. There isn't, you know, just like one race or one class that can say poetry is ours. Mm-hmm. We have poetry. It's for everyone and it should be accessible, I think.
Yeah. I actually was thinking about, because we referenced before we turned on the mic here, that this was the interview I was, like, most nervous about, because I know, was it for your birthday, Leslie, that you, like, only wanted a poetry jam or whatever? And so I had, like, great anxiety about picking a poem that I was like, it's got to speak to Leslie, but I also have to understand it. Otherwise, mm-hmm. like, maybe I'm not talking about what I want to talk about when I'm giving an ode to my sister that I love, you know? So like, I felt very intimidated by it, but I remember my husband, who's not intimidated by anything that I can think of, was just like, Tessa, you listen to poetry all the time. 'Cause I love rap. I love hip hop. I love,
that's what I
you
was
know,
trying to say.
Yeah. Exactly. So yes. It's true that yep. like the stigma around poetry is actually what's intimidating to me, mm-hmm. but really, I mean, even Leslie's favorite, Hamilton. I mean, it's just hours and hours of poetry, which I do also love, yeah. Not to the extent that Leslie does, I think. But I've always been able to appreciate it, but not understand that I'm consuming poetry all the time. Absolutely. It's just that it's not what kind of, I think, our culture recognizes as poetry. Mm-hmm. So I love to hear that from you, because now I can relax.
Yeah, I can relax. Absolutely. I was going to use Hamilton as my, look, I know things about modern culture reference. This is the only thing I know. We don't have a TV. So I, yes, Hamilton, absolutely, that's poetry. And I would say, the hip-hop and the rap, a lot of times I feel like that's the stuff right now that is the most vibrant and alive mm-hmm. stuff being written. Sometimes, you know, even I, like, if I open some poetry journals, I am not taken and I don't want to sit and read it. I don't mm-hmm. have a lot of time mm-hmm. to spare. And right. so if it's something doesn't grab me, I won't devote my time to it. And a lot of times I think some things that are on the page are, they aren't alive and vibrant like mm-hmm. that. And so I think that you are a consumer of poetry, certainly.
I love how Rumi is having this
comeback. Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. I was just at the bookstore the other day looking at, like, business-type books, and I opened it up, and there was one of the forward kind of pages of this book, like, was a Rumi quote. Like, he, you know, is this, wow, Persian poet from centuries ago, this kind of mystic figure mm-hmm. that really kind of encompasses what I think is beautiful about poetry, is just like the truth that it speaks.
He was born in 1207.
Yeah, so he, you know, the experiences that he does explore.
I think that's such a great background noise. I was just thinking that it is great. Coffee being poured the whole time.
We should. We can pipe the smell of coffee through the podcast.
Yeah. But I do love that Rumi is having a moment and mm-hmm. that people are, I mean, a lot of people know who Mary Oliver is.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because her poetry is so accessible and so beautiful and just such, it just captures this, mm-hmm. this truth about what life is for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And I'm at the point where I have no shame in saying, like, I love Rumi, I love Mary Oliver, and it was definitely, I felt like a no-no to say those things in grad school, because they are poets who are not for the masses, that has such a negative connotation, but they're accessible, mm-hmm. and but now I feel like, hell yes, I love them. They're accessible, yeah. and their messages are beautiful and needed and relevant. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, Mary Oliver, Rumi, you know, these poets, they're, yes, yeah. I'm glad they're having moments.
Me
everywhere.
Too.
Yeah.
And it's kind of getting people into then just that whole world.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
It's like a gateway, kind of.
Exactly, it's a gateway.
More beautiful.
It's the marijuana of poetry.
It is.
Marijuana of poetry.
Marijuana of poetry. So another poet who I love is Nikki Giovanni, and I think she also is really accessible. But I was listening to her speak on the podcast on being the other day, and she was talking about not wasting your unique experience. So she was positioned as an intelligent, alive, brown-skinned woman during the civil rights movement, and it was at that time that she began to really use her poetry to express what was happening that day, kind of that period of time. So I loved how she talked about just using your placement, your person, and your experience to kind of express yourself and your corner of the world. So I'm wondering, Aubrey, if you could tell us a little bit about that place that you're currently writing from.
Yeah, I loved this question. I think it's interesting because I think just something I've been thinking about a lot with social media is that we get this idea that we don't have a unique experience because we're fed all these opinions that are our opinions. And, you know, on Facebook, I have all these friends who, you know, they're mamas and they're conscious of the world and what's going on. And so I forget that, you know, not everyone feels the way I feel. And so I recently had this experience where I met this friend. I guess I should call him a friend. And he's a volunteer, and so I see him weekly. But he has a very different perspective on the world than I do, and specifically in regards to, say, refugees and religion and faith and the ideas of heaven and hell. And I forget that there are people who feel that way. And so that recently spurred me on to say, like, wait a minute, I do have this voice that I feel, and I have these opinions that I feel really strongly about. And if I don't speak them, you know, I hold it in and that's unhealthy.
Right.
So I would say that takes a long way to get to your question, but certainly my experience is just a mother who's really worried about the world and really wounded by the world on a daily basis. You know, we see these stories about babies who are crossing the oceans in rafts, and some of them don't get there, don't get to the other side. And then you have someone who lives on your block who thinks that, you know, hell no, we shouldn't let those people in this country. They're just going to bomb us. You know, and it's horrible. It's heartbreaking. And I don't know, half the time I don't know how to be a person in that world. And then it's even harder to be a mother in that world because I really feel like some other mother, you know, some other mother somewhere doesn't know if their child's going to make it through the day. And anyway, so the only thing I can do sometimes with that is write, which isn't always useful, but it's the only thing sometimes I can do.
You know, I think that is the way that poetry and art, sometimes that's the only way for people to recognize the experience, because you don't know that kind of desperation where you'll put your kids and you on a raft and just hope for the best. But you know the kind of desperation where you're looking at your child and like, God, this is the world you're growing up in. Please, please come out of it okay.
Exactly.
So poetry can speak to a form of the desperation that the world is seeing. And so your neighbor, I think too often we're talking at each other, but then you notice a piece of art or you consume a piece of art that doesn't do the talking. It just exposes this piece of the world that you didn't recognize before. And so for me, even though, you know, at a glance, I'm not seeking out poetry, I see that as a role in art in general. I do love the written word. And sometimes, like, a shorter abbreviation of that is, like, I can't talk it words on a paper. I can't talk back to it. And so I get to just consume it and just, oh my God, that's totally different. So I think if you wrote about that desperation and then your neighbor could look at that and then maybe, not necessarily, but maybe he would then say, oh, that I didn't consider that part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I've actually been thinking about that exact thing lately and realizing that, you know, Leslie brought up something that I wrote for the Midwest Writing Center, the questions about poetry as medicine and whether or not poetry can incite revolution. And does it play that role of informing who don't have the same opinions? And I feel like the deeper I get into this sort of sadness about the current the current situation, the more I feel like I'm not sure if it can. And I'm not sure if I care if it can, if that makes any sense, because I think maybe what poetry can do is help the poet who's writing, you know, can, it's a form of sitting with those feelings and trying to make them into something that's a little more useful and make yourself into something that's a little more useful and not just sitting around the house desperate and, you know, Googling images of Syrian children. But I also believe that, and maybe you're right, and I hope that you're right, Tessie, that maybe, you know, someone could read a poem about the crisis, or someone could read a, read some Wendell Berry, someone could pick up some Wendell Berry and then sell their SUV. Maybe that would be amazing, and I hope for that, but I almost feel like it's more of the case that that someone who already feels those things, who already feels that desperation and that sadness about what's happening, can read those words and say, "Thank God I'm not alone."
Yeah.
Thank God someone else feels this way. I don't know. It's something I've been thinking about a lot.
Yeah.
In your book, the epigraph is a Wendell Berry line of poetry that says, "Be joyful, though you have considered all the facts."
Yeah.
And so you are definitely someone who is awake to the world and who, you know, is taking it in and learning what you can and then responding to it. And the way you're responding to it is unique. It's through poetry. And I want to talk more about this idea of poetry as medicine, or maybe more generally just writing as an act of healing.
Yeah.
Tell us just how you think that this can kind of function either in the world or just in the inner world of one individual.
I think when I was the writer in residence, that idea of poetry as medicine was really just something that I brought up. I wanted it to be a question, and I wanted it to be this community response of, like, do you guys think that this is a thing, you know? Can poetry do this? Can poetry heal? Is poetry a type of medicine? And I wasn't sure, and I, you know, it was really... Our poetry community is so great and so vibrant here, and everyone really kind of, everyone communicates with each other and interacts, and not me for the past year, but I've been home with the baby. But I will get back there, and in the past, it's been great to be a part of that. So I really did want that to be just sort of a question and say, you know, what do we think about this? What do I think about this? And it's only been recently that I feel like I can say, yes, absolutely, it can. Because, you know, like this, the Wendell Berry quote, that I love it so much. Because I feel like so oftentimes the idea is, oh, just be joyful. This magical thinking of, no, just focus on the positive, guys, think good thoughts. And that's utter bullshit.
Yeah.
And so the whole idea of be joyful though you've considered all the facts is really powerful and really difficult. And I think that sort of speaks to the idea of what poetry as medicine can be, because the world is the wound, right? You know, like the statistics and the graphs, all of that, that is really wounding. And those are the facts with a capital F. And so I think poetry's job needs to be not to break people's hearts, but to say, like, look, my heart is broken too, and I'm laying it all out for you, and I know these things as well. You're not alone in knowing these facts.
Okay.
I don't know.
No, that's terrific. So when you talk about then, like, that kind of the gift to the world, like, that poetry can be. So you're writing, and you've taken all of these experiences, and you found an artistic way to then give that back to the world. That's a gift, I think. I mean, I think all art has some sort of, when you share your art, you're sharing this sort of perspective and this experience, and I receive that as a gift. I had a professor in grad school who talked about poetry, like, in real, like, the economic terms of it, the economy of gifts. Like, there's not a lot of poets out there that are making any money, you know? So it's that realization among poets that you're making art, you're not really making profit, probably. Mm-hmm. So is that true for you? And if so, why is that important in a society that really values the economy of money?
Yeah. Okay. First, can we go back also to this idea of poetry as medicine?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
A couple,
yes.
A couple things to separate with that. Yeah. Anyway, but the idea of, like, poets making profit. Yeah. Nobody ever thinks that. Nobody ever, you know, you're going to go to graduate school and get an MFA or go get a PhD and you're going to make money off your poems. You know, I've always thought probably I'll teach. But the thing is that lately I've been feeling like there is a place for not a profit, but perhaps, like, a livelihood.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. You don't know this about me, but I have this dream of being an herbalist. So I have my big, like, my that's awesome.
Yeah. Soul sister.
I want to be an herbalist too. I've looked up how to do that.
I know. but my big dream that I hold on to is sort of an apothecary where there's poetry and herbs. You know, this idea of medicine, that there are different types of medicine, you know, and medicine in the sense of the, like, half a little bit of magic kind of thing, like medicine woman, the old school use of the word medicine.
Right.
So I do sort of think that there's maybe a place for some sort of livelihood to be made. But also I feel like that's a no-no to say, you know, there's this idea of an artist, you know, an artist is supposed to be solitary and probably
struggling.
An addict,
yes.
And,
right.
Yes.
And poor.
Yes.
And I have just recently come to this place where I'm like, no, like, screw that.
Right.
You know, other people make, livings off of things that they love.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is an exchange happening there, and poetry has value. I've been thinking a lot about broadsides, posters of poems, and I think broadsides are just beautiful, and I think printmakers are, yes. I love that art form. So I think there's something there.
Oh,
I don't know.
Gosh.
It's not a fully formed thought.
Well, even your book, though. Like, your
oh,
book
my
is
goodness.
So
yes.
Beautiful.
So, yeah.
Just
so
physically beautiful. Like, the words
oh
are beautiful,
my gosh.
But so is the packaging.
No,
you know?
It's so pretty. It's so Phantom Press. They used to be Phantom Limb. Now they are Phantom Press. Are the publishers of this book. And it is so beautiful.
It's
a hand-bound, letter-pressed cover. And yeah, I love when they came back to me with the designs, the possibilities. It's like, oh,
yeah,
it's beautiful. And there are actually some really phenomenal letterpress people around here in town too. And
yeah.
So yes, I have thoughts. I have thoughts about this.
Right.
I remember when I was in college, I don't remember who the band was, but they were, for a long time, their message was kind of like, "I'm the man, we're keeping our tickets are never going to be over $14, whatever." Well, then of course they got picked up by a record label and everyone was up in arms. Like, you're a sellout, right? They're calling them a sellout. Right. And then it was finally like, no, we actually just realized that just because our art is a gift doesn't mean it should be free, you know? Yeah. And I thought, oh gosh, that's so true, because I often think that. And even we joked before on the podcast that, like, Leslie put poetry on some burlap when she was, like, waiting for Centayu to come home.
Aww.
And it, we joke as about healing. It, but as like healing, it was a healing for you. Uh-huh. But I also love seeing it. It's also a gift to me, too, when you go, you know, we joke about it. But the reality is it's really beautiful. And I like hearing you say, I don't know why we got the idea that, like, you had to be solitary and drunk and poor.
Right.
Because that's not a reality. You don't have to be. That is certainly how some function better, so they think. But, like, that's not.
Yeah.
And I also want to take it back a little bit to the medicine as well, because I was thinking, when you were talking, like, I don't know that my neighbor would ever, his mind would ever be changed by poetry, right? With regards to medicine is like one of those things where if you take it too early, it does nothing for you. If you take it at just the right time, it heals you, right? And so your neighbor would have to hear it at just the right time.
Yeah.
Or, and like your idea of being an herbalist plus this, you know, is the idea that the reason I wanted to be an herbalist is because my acupuncturist is as well. And she will not treat you unless you're open to doing kind of the soul portion of it too.
Yes.
Which is what poetry would do. You know, poetry would heal that part, right?
Yes.
You're picking up what I'm putting down.
I'll be your first customer.
See, and this is what I have been sort of tapping into, that idea of poetry as there is a world for this, and there's a want for this. And you automatically knew what I was talking about when I said, like, apothecary, poetry, and herbs.
Yeah.
You know, it's not this weird abstract thing, so which makes me feel like, oh, there are more people like us.
Yeah,
there are people who would come and fill that shop and hang out. And
well, I think it goes back to what we said earlier, though, about, like, poetry being intimidating until you actually know that it's not. And it's the same thing with, like, this herbalism. Until it's not intimidating, it's just, it's different. It's not a part of the fabric of our culture yet. Doesn't mean it can't be.
Yeah.
Right.
I want to hear about this burlap and this entire thing, because I think this is exactly what I'm talking about, is poetry as medicine for the act of it, you know, not necessarily even the reading of it from the outside source, but the act of the one person doing it. I'm interested in this because I think also of poetry as the medicine thing as being sort of almost like a spell.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that this was a moment of healing for you, and I would love to hear about
that.
I would love to hear about this.
So when we were going through the adoption process with our youngest child, it was very dramatic. There was a lot of, is this going to happen? Is this not going to happen? And I found myself in this period of heightened creativity. And I was just feeling like, you know, every night after we would put our boys to bed, I just had to do something with my hands, like just creative. And one thing that I really became interested in was honestly like taking old frames, paintings, things that I would find at thrift shops, and bringing them home and sort of re-envision, giving them new life. And what I would do is I would start with, like, I would either paint them, repaint them, do, like, some collaging on them, and then what I really found enjoyment in and a fascination with was just covering the entire frame with burlap. So there's, like, layers to these things, but I would cover it in burlap. And then I was also reading a lot of poetry, and I would find lines that really, really resonated with me. And I would just pretty meticulously, using stencils, like, paint those lines on the burlap. And so it really became, you know, looking back, I was sort of obsessed with doing this, but I now understand that it was really like this meditative process that I was, whatever part of my brain was just fully concentrated on that line, that word, that letter.
What are some of the poems that you...
So one of them was actually by Rumi, and it was, the line is, "Your sweet sugarcane, God love," and I just really was fascinated with the idea of sugarcane, God love, God hyphen love.
Yeah.
And then the other one was from a poem called "The Dumka" by BJ something. I'm not going to be able to remember. I'll post it in the show notes. But that, it's a love poem. A couple is sitting on the porch and they're holding hands, and the hand is described as the last fallen leaf. So like this really brittle kind of, it just really struck me. And those two in particular, I mean, they're all over my house. Like, "Your hands like butterflies," that's a Nikki Giovanni line, was another one. But there was something really healing for me about, I don't know if it was a distraction or what, but just there was something about those, like I said, even that hyphen was healing when I gave it so much attention and when I was able to focus that.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Yes. So this is, Leslie, that's such a... I can't imagine going through that. It must have been. I cannot imagine.
Yeah, it was
not,
it was long
having
long
your child.
Yeah.
With you.
Yeah.
And what you're saying about that, using poetry and sitting down, and you had a practice that you were doing every night after you put those boys to bed, and that's how I feel poetry can be healing and change people. I don't always think it has to be picking up a book and reading it. But when you take, when a line speaks to you in that way and you take it and you make it a practice, and you do something with it, you know, you were focusing your thoughts and you were focusing that turmoil that you were feeling, into a project. I was thinking of this. There's this musical theater writer, Jason Robert Brown. He wrote Last 5 Years, actually.
Okay.
But before he wrote that, he wrote this musical called Songs for a New World. And there was a song in there, a woman who's sewing a flag during the American Revolution. And there's some line that's like, "One more star, one more thread, while you pray your child's not dead." And it made me think of, my God, like, what did mothers do back then in those times where there's nothing to distract you? You couldn't turn on the TV. You couldn't, like, look on Facebook. You were solitary and by yourself. And what would you do? And that's what you would do, is you would have a handicraft. You know, you would have to put yourself into some project. And it's, when you said that about, you just had to, you were obsessed, you were, you had to do something. It's the
genetically thing, hardwired into you.
Right.
Yeah. As a coping mechanism.
Survival. Yes. Yeah. Because how could you sit with that thought? How could you,
right?
What else would you have done? You couldn't just sit there and And I feel like this is, that makes me so, makes my heart just full to know that, you know, poetry did do that for you. And it's not just a, you know, it's not just this sweet thing that we think that, oh, poetry as
it's not just a love song, or it's not just a love poem, but it can be so much more.
Right.
I mean, it can be that, but so much more. So, Aubrey, you've written a bit about these kind of dark days, and I'm going to read something that you wrote on while you were the poet in residence at the Midwest Writing Center. You wrote, "I had a couple years of some pretty deep sadness that looked, and I'm not proud, mostly like this, drunkenly night swimming in Lake Superior and learning everything there is to know about end time predictions. This was not cute. This is no way to live. I surfaced and decided it was best for me and the planet to learn to farm and to stop reading conspiracy theory websites. And then, wonder of wonders, I had a baby." talk to us a little bit about that kind of journey, that kind of the darkness of that, and then motherhood. I know also I had read that you have been sober now for 3 years. And I'm wondering, you know, was that kind of part of your coping during this time? Just talk a little bit about those darker days and how you came back into the light.
At the time of that little, my husband calls it my POFO, my peak oil freak out. Because it started with reading a little bit about peak oil.
Right, POFO.
And it was also around the time of all that 2012 business, which is, in hindsight, is very silly and very ridiculous, but I think it just sort of wove its way into the peak oil thing. And
right,
all
like
these,
the Mayan prediction, right? The end of the world.
Yeah,
okay.
And all of this, like, all of these climate change predictions were coming up. And I think just at the time, I was in grad school and
which is the perfect time to embrace conspiracy theories.
It's the perfect time. But later on, I found Wendell Berry and the Mad Farmer poem specifically. Mm-hmm. And he essentially, I read what he writes and I think, you know what I know. Mm-hmm. You've been here. You know, he talks about waking up in the night just full of grief and terror for the world. And he talks about just not knowing what is in store for his children. And that's terrifying. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, you read interviews with him and he knows these things. He reads the numbers that you read. And that for me was so empowering and healing and made me just breathe this sigh of relief. Like, my God, like, you know how I feel, you know this information, and you're still walking around, like, you're living a life, and you're a healthy member of society. Mm-hmm. You're not jumping into Lake Superior in the middle of the night after drinking a bottle and a half of wine, you know? Like, you can function.
Yeah.
And so that was really, really helpful to me.
Leslie has talked before about being really intentional with what you consume as far as the media or whatever, just how I don't think any of us are conscious of how that all really affects us. When you watch a TV show, if it's violent, how that affects us. And I just heard you saying you were consuming the same things from scientists as you were from Wendell Berry, but he gave you hope and they were saying the same things, right? The takeaway for mama bears listening is just like, you can still learn about climate change. You can still learn about, but try to learn it from a source that also lets you know that, like, all of that is true and it's scary, but you can still live and you can still find joy and you can still do all of that, as opposed to just the end times online, you know, resources to be really intentional about where you're getting that message, so that you're not closing your eyes. You don't ever want to close your eyes and become blind to what's happening in the world, but do it in a way that hopefully is through some piece of art that can help you manage it in a way that's productive.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your chapbook of poetry. You touch on a lot of different things like the earth and the human response to violence and motherhood. What do you find that this is a reflection of, like, if you can think back to when you were doing this writing, how did these things kind of find a way into your poems?
Most of these poems were written after I had Arlo, who's my oldest, and he came, like you read earlier, just on the tail end of this POFO. I guess, you know, I was certainly not in any way, shape, or form ready to be a mother, but you figure it out really fast, and you know, it was a crash course, and I crammed big time, and, you know, I realized very quickly, like, I do not have the headspace to be on the internet searching you know, are we all going to die? Basically, like, I don't have the headspace, and I cannot be a good mother to this tiny little human mm-hmm. if I am there. So I think that the poems came from me just having to get that out, like, get the worries out and mm-hmm. say and acknowledge them. You know, there's that, what's that quote from the Gospel of Thomas about what you bring forth will save you, what you keep in will destroy you. I don't know, okay. you know, something like that. But if you, I know that if I keep something in, it just swallows me mm-hmm. up. So, mm-hmm. so I think the act of just writing about these things that I was really worried about, it was just essential to mm-hmm. me. I wasn't thinking about a book. I was, you know, I was a new mama. We had just moved home. We were living with my in-laws, and it wasn't, I was so far away from academia and the publishing world and any of that. So I wasn't really thinking of my career, quote, unquote. Mm-hmm. I think it was just something that I needed to do. And I was, you know, holding a baby for however many yeah. hours a day. And so one hand, I wrote with one hand most of the poems in this manuscript.
As you were talking about just how almost therapeutic it was to write while you had... I, too, was going through the adoption process, which is when I started my blog, because we've talked before about, like, sometimes I just don't even know how I feel about something until I write, because yeah. then all of a sudden all this stuff comes up, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's where the tension was. Like, I could feel the tension, but I didn't know where the source was. And then you write about it, and then you're like, there's the source, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
writing can often be therapy, and I think the three of us know that, right? But so many of our mama bears could benefit from writing, and not necessarily publishing it in a book or on the website or on a website, but just for themselves. So what could you prescribe to the average mom as a practice of writing as therapy?
So I really love haiku, writing haikus. And I think forms like that are really fun to hold in your head mm-hmm. during the day because mm-hmm. I mean, haiku are so easy. 5, 7, 5, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, those are all the, mm-hmm. all you need. 3 lines. They're really teeny. Mm-hmm. And sometimes us mamas, we don't have time. Mm-hmm. We don't have time to sit down and write a long poem. But it's fun. I feel like haiku, when you're writing them, they just kind of pop into your head, and then you get to have the fun of, like, counting it out on your
yeah.
fingers.
Yeah.
And then also, that's a fun thing to do with kiddos, too. Mm-hmm. But I like the idea of poetry as just a fun thing to play with, too. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be this thing where you're writing all your darkest fears,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which ends up being what I do. But, you know, I feel like poetry is also really fun, and mm-hmm. it's a way to play. So I would say find something that's a way to play. So, you know, a haiku would be one. I don't know if you guys have seen those 6-word memoir things.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about? On NPR.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
When I
used to teach, I would have my students do 6-word memoirs mm-hmm. as just a way of really getting out the superfluous words mm-hmm. and focusing on the ones that are necessary. And that's not always necessary. They don't always end up being actual poems, but they can be. And it's just fun to count them off on your fingers and, you know, mm-hmm. figure out the words that you love. And it could even just be like 6-word afternoon.
I love that idea. I think mama bears, we want to hear your 6-word memoir, don't we?
Yeah.
So, right now, think about it and write it. So even if you're driving, just like do your no hands, you know, but like, yes,
yeah.
But 6-word memoir, we want to hear it. Email us mamabeardares@gmail.com, or of course you can post it on our social media on the link to this podcast episode. Aubrey, we talk a lot about the mother self and the other self, and we always encourage our mama bears to nourish the other self, because then you're just better at the mother self. So other than poetry, obviously, because you've spoken a lot about what that does for your other self, other than that, what else do you do to nourish your other self?
Currently, I feel like there's not a lot of separation between my mother self and mm-hmm. my other self, which I've been thinking about a lot yeah. lately. I don't know. There was this, did you guys read that editorial in the New York Times about creativity and parenthood? Mm-hmm. It was just recent. And
yeah,
you did?
I did. Yeah.
Holy cow. It's sort of about many things, but about this difficulty in being in being a creative person and being an artist as a career when you are also home with children. And it made me feel a lot of things. But one of them that I've been thinking about a lot lately is, why does it have to be a separate thing? You know, why do I have to be my poet self, but then also I'm my mother self home with children? And in some ways, it's just a fact. You know, I don't have the headspace to sit down and devote myself to writing a poem when I'm home with my two boys. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, on my best days as a mom, I feel like I weave in those creative mm-hmm. moments into my day with them. So, like, I get a lot of joy out of hanging diapers on the line. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but
yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
Like, a lot. Or, you know, my kids, they don't love to color, but I work on it. I'm like, let's color. But I sort of, like, drew out a little broadside one day mm-hmm. when we were just sitting around with the crayons. And it made me so happy. It made me happier almost than if I had been at a coffee shop writing
right.
a poem.
Yeah.
You know, or been at a coffee shop sending out submissions mm-hmm. to publishers. And this sort of goes back to the idea of, like, getting poetry out of academia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mm-hmm. in the world, and it should be in the world, and it should be around my kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want them to see that that I do this thing, and I want it to be part of their lives. And I don't know, I don't necessarily want it to be a separate self, if
uh-huh.
that makes any
yeah.
sense. But that's so problematic, and it's so difficult. But yeah, and you know, when I'm concentrating on that other self, like you guys said, when I say I'm thinking about a poem that I'd like to write, or I'm thinking about a poem that I read, I am a much better mother
yeah.
than if I'm thinking about the book on child rearing
right.
that I just read.
Yeah.
Because the book on child rearing probably stresses me out
yeah.
and makes me feel like I'm doing something wrong.
Yes.
But the poem makes me feel alive and creative and
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting.
I love that.
Yeah.
All right, it's time for our segment we like to do at the end of every episode, and we call it the Obsess Sesh.
Obsess Sesh! Here it is!
So, we want to hear three things you're currently
oh my
obsessed
gosh.
With.
Okay, so this is going to show you that I have, like, no outside life besides my children.
It's fine.
I'm obsessed with my Medela breast pump.
Yes.
I just pumped for the first time to get out of the
house,
gosh, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not really, I'm not obsessed with it.
But kind of also you are.
But kind of I am. So what am I obsessed with? One thing that I'm obsessed with that I keep talking about is I just read Cold Mountain by Charles Frazier.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the most freaking beautiful book I've
mm-hmm.
ever read, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get it out of my head. And then I tried to watch the movie directly afterwards, and it was horrible.
It is
and I
so
turned it
bad.
Off.
Yeah.
I turned it off because I didn't want it to
ruin it.
To infuse
yeah.
my
mm-hmm.
my book. But I feel like that book is poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So I want everyone to read Cold Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
What else am I obsessed with? I'm obsessed with... Have you guys heard of Taproot Magazine?
No.
Taproot. Taproot Magazine is my... As my son would say, it is my jam.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's this gorgeous magazine, and it's all analog. You know, it's they have a website and a blog, but it's not very active.
Yeah.
This is, like, an actual print.
Wow.
Beautiful
That's
magazine
awesome.
That will
mm-hmm.
come in your mailbox. And it's all this writing about... like homesteading
mm-hmm.
and I don't know, fermenting sauerkraut
oh
and
gosh,
being a mama
yeah.
and being a parent and just like living lightly on the earth. And it's basically just, you know, a magazine full of these contributors that I would want to be friends with.
Yeah.
Herbalism, it's, you know, there's
awesome.
Tons of herbal stuff in
yeah.
it. And you love it.
Okay.
Anyway, I get that in the mail, and I'm a really like, I don't do well with the internet. Like, I
yeah.
feel like it's too abstract for me, and there's too much there. So to have something in front of me that
yeah.
is tangible
yeah.
and really visceral is really good for me.
Mm-hmm.
So Taproot
okay.
magazine is
I'm gonna
my...
I'm going to check it out. Yeah.
It is my, yes, my jam.
So, Aubrey, just on behalf of our Mama Bears, thank you so much for our conversation today. I know...
I am inspired, and I have no doubt that you will have inspired other mama bears as well. So, Leslie, you want to give them the dare?
Ooh, yeah, I do. Dare, huh? All right, mama bears, we will end with a dare today. We dare you to be truth seekers and truth tellers. May you find the extraordinary in the ordinary, and may you be awake to your inner life. Use that inner life to propel you to make beauty in this world and share it with others. Put your love in the world in whatever way you show it best. It may be poetry, it may be burlap and paint, it may be your six-word memoir, whatever it is. Show your best self and give it to others and let them be inspired and let them soak up the love that you have to offer. Have a great week, Mama Bears!
Have a great week!